CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. So yesterday was a public holiday, and a lot of people decided they'd take it nice and easy. And it means you have to be back at work today, though. I do know one or two people who've taken the day off, and tomorrow as well, and might be making full use of this weekend. But you know what? A, it's very cold, and B, these Wednesday public holidays don't work out very well. You have all the best intentions, and then it just ends up being a waste. What's that, Pums?
They're perfect if you take the 2 days off, like Monday, Tuesday, or Thursday, Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have a super long weekend. But I thought it was nice to kind of have a midweek break.
You like that?
It's a bit like a siesta.
It feels harder to get back to work today, though.
Yes.
Don't you think it's more difficult after a day like yesterday to wake up early this morning?
Oof. Which was also such a nice day.
That was. It was actually beautiful.
It was just winter in Joburg. The sun was out.
No, I'm with you.
Well, my break didn't start off well because on Tuesday afternoon, I was stuck in, it's in my neighborhood, so it's one of these small roads.
Yeah.
So we were stuck in a bit of a traffic jam because a big family van with an attached caravan had jammed.
Oh.
On the road. It gave me a bit of like the what happened a few weeks ago with the ship and the thingamabobby?
Suez Canal. Yeah, the
Suez Canal.
Yeah.
It gave me a bit of that. Just a bit of a weird deja vu. Because now we had to wait and then everyone got out of their cars to try and tell them to reverse this way and reverse that way. It was a 13,000 point turn for them to get out of the road. And then I thought, have fun.
Is there no other access to that road? Couldn't you just like turn around and go access the road from another
side? It was just going to cause more chaos as we were going to try to do that because there's a boom gate and then there was security and then people are trying to move forward and it was a mess. Yeah, but it was only for like 15 minutes.
I don't think we should have caravans. They should be banned. Horrible things. No, they're horrible things, Pumi. Come on. Have you ever seen a caravan and gone, that's what I want. That's what I need.
No, but exactly. I have seen a caravan and wondered why we don't have RVs here.
Yes. It's still a bit of a childhood fantasy of mine to be in one. I've never been in a caravan. I've never traveled in one before.
No.
You can't travel in a caravan. You can't travel in it. You can't have people in the caravan.
You're not allowed
when
to
you're driving
it. Only like get into it once you're stationary.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can't.
But I know that I actually hate it though. Never mind.
That makes it even more horrible, you know.
But why don't we? I wondered. I mean, literally yesterday, I wondered why don't we have RVs? Because that's a perfect thing, you know, like a big motorhome.
Well, funny, my brother is, I think he's renting one in August for the children and, you know, he and his wife to go somewhere. They I think it's somewhere in the bush. And I you know, as much as I hate caravans and I hate RVs, I'm kind of going to see how they feel about this and how it goes for them. You'll never catch me in those things, ever. Not for love or for money. You can give me, and listen, I've seen those ones on those American shows where they deck them out completely. And it's like a house on wheels. It's really, you know, it's huge and impressive. And, you know, they can make it look really good on the inside. But it's just, I don't believe you should have that. Really.
But it will all boil down to the Lou situation for me. I don't care what sort of thing you have.
Yes.
What sort of lighting fixtures.
Right.
Whether you use real leather or not. Mm-hmm. It will boil down to the Lou situation.
100%.
My ancestors walked so that I could run and not have to pump my own poo out of a moving vehicle.
In a pipe, I mean, really, you know? Come on. Horrible.
No, when
I see caravans on the road, I instantly have, I get into a bit of a temper. It's ridiculous. And they might not even be in the way. They might be in a different lane. I just see them and I imagine... Now, I know that you know, a lot of people growing up didn't have a whole lot of money. Neither did I every stage of my childhood. You know, we didn't get to go on fancy holidays and things. But to I just believe it's such a step down into absolute misery to have to drive around in a caravan. I mean, really, to me, that's just the lowest of the low. There's no amount of poor. There's no amount of poor.
Do you go camping?
No, not a chance. Are you mad? I'd rather stay at home. I would rather not have a holiday than go camping.
Really?
What do you mean, really? Can you imagine me without running water and electricity?
Well, I don't know. Are caravan parks still a thing, or specifically in this?
They are.
There were people in caravans when I went with my family to the Kruger Park the other day. You know, because they've got the camp
section,
and then a part of the camp is for people who have caravans and mobile homes and that kind of thing. No, thank you, not for me.
Yeah, a lot of places have them, especially those places kind of like bush type places.
They used to have them at the sea as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Remember there was this one beach we went to when we were kids, and then just a little bit further down there was another beach with people who were in caravans. I don't know why, because clearly I'm the only one who has a problem with this. No one else seems to have the issue that I have with it. It's probably just a me thing.
It's practical. Let's think of the plus side. It's practical. Okay.
Yeah. Go on, what else? How's it practical? If they schlep this thing along.
What do you think they do with it? What do you think they do with it when they're at home, when they're not traveling? Do they use it as a spare room at the back of the yard?
You can see it parked in some neighborhoods. You can see people, you know, they have like a little gate on the side of their house or whatever, and you see the caravan just chilling there. I think it just gets dirty and dusty and revolting.
There's a particular friend of mine who I sometimes just dread visiting because of the configuration of their garages and their yard.
Yeah.
They have the caravan
park
next to the garage. Then when you get into the garage, then there's two canoes on top. And then it's just too much stuff. They're a whole big adventure family. So what else do they have there? I'm trying to actually picture what I have to dodge and duck as I drive in. There's a whole
I know the kind of people you're talking about, right? They're the kind of people who you see them on the on the highway on public holidays or when you're going down to the coast, and they've got a
is what I saw yesterday.
They got a car. Yes. They got a caravan. They've got a trailer. They've got bikes on
the trailer. They do
have a trailer. There we go. Got bikes on the trailer. They've got a roof rack with a fucking canoe on it. Then they've got a jet ski or a four-wheeler on a trailer. It's just it's too much. It's like, really, what are you?
Oh, look at that. Look at Tracy's. Tracy went with her kids on a luxury camper.
Okay, let's listen to this story. She goes, we did a trip in a camper van, a luxury camper van. It was great. Our own bathroom, down duvets, all the luxury. I can't stand caravans and camping in dust. This was great. I'm not convinced. Sorry.
Katu
Cat says, one of my best holidays as a kid was when we went in a caravan. We read books and we ate biscuit the whole day. I think it was like during an April holiday. When you're a kid, I think it's exciting, but then you develop pride and you decide this is not for me. Yeah, sorry.
What a particular thing that really irks you, Gareth.
I'm not grumpy about this. I just think caravans should all be destroyed. It's a bad reflection on humanity. It's embarrassing to all of us. Is your house on wheels? I mean, come on, do me a favor. Maybe it's because so many of the very worst people that I've encountered also happen to have caravans. Maybe that's why they poisoned me against caravans at a young age. There might be very nice people who have them, but I remember when I was a kid, I always thought that the people in caravans were shit, and maybe they gave me reason to think that, and therefore I've carried that into adulthood. So I'm poisoned against them, effectively. Maybe that's what's happened.
Sure. Therapy can cure you.
So we went I went with some friends for a beautiful lunch. Pums, you know Casalinga, right? It's like a Joburg.
Yes.
It's like a Joburg institution. And I was very worried about them because I remember about this time last year, we heard that they were closing down forever, that coronavirus had shut them down. Well, they're back. They're up and running. Had a lovely lunch there yesterday and just people everywhere. It was packed. So good news.
And they also have they have like a vegan or alternative food section.
They do.
Which has all of the like all the plant-based eating.
That's right. They have an organic farm there, and it's nice if you have kids because they look after the kids. They do face painting and they make them do treasure hunts. And so if you're a mom or a dad and you bring your kid along, you know, there's something for you to do or for them to do while you're busy with your friends. It's quite nice.
I love that place.
To be out there then with yesterday's sun.
Exactly. No, it was magic. It was really nice. Yeah. So that was a good break from reality. And my sister is moving in. She and her boyfriend have bought a house. And they've been working on this for the last week and a half, 2 weeks. But like seriously working. Doing all the kind of difficult stuff, you know. Painting and sanding things and that's hard work, but they're very excited. So I went and popped in there and see what they were up to, doing all the difficult stuff.
They're moving into their house. Okay,
together.
You didn't finish that statement, and I was already silently praying for you. So I hope renovations were not delayed and they need a place to move into, so they were going to move in with you.
No, look, I love my family. If they were in a tight spot, sure, I'd help them out. You know, if something terrible happened, of course I'd help them out. But I realized a while ago, I like my space. And even if I have a really, really good friend, and I've got lots of friends who I love to pieces, but if they stayed here for more than a night, I would not. The friendship would be under enormous strain.
Yeah. Look, house guests are a thing, but I'm just thinking about all that sanding and painting and all of that, and I'm getting to that place. I've lived in my place now for about 15 years. And it was brand new when I moved in because we built it from scratch. Right? And now it's that house that like, everything, first of all, the maintenance of a house. I'm learning the lesson the ANC has never learned, that maintenance is an ongoing thing.
Right.
You don't wait until it's all broken down.
Correct.
And then start fixing. You've got to do it all the time. But I'm at that place where I feel like the house is so old now. You can't get anything properly clean anymore, right?
It's what you mean.
Been touched for 15 years, this door, no matter how much you like wipe it with the, it's been like people touching it for 15 years, this particular space in the stove that's hard to get to.
I know what you mean.
I'm feeling like it's such a adult thing. And I'm just like, we've been sold a dad, guys.
But
this is being an adult.
I know, being an adult, but also this idea of property ownership being a really good thing. You know, it's stupid. It's not a good thing, right? It's hard.
I do. I wish I could like find a new place and just move into a fresh, brand new place. Also, you get bored, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've lived here for so long. And when we first moved in, lots of people were still hadn't built their places. But now the complex is actually getting quite full. People are. And when we moved in, it was kind of in that dip when a lot of people money was scarce and there was the financial crash. So a lot of people didn't build right away. For a very long time, I lived in the complex and there were like two or three houses. And now there's lots of people here. And now it's just.
See, we're moaning. We are moaning this morning, but this is what happens when you get old as well. You start moaning. I mean, house guests, according to Mandla, house guests are like fresh fish. They go off after two or three days. Exactly.
Amen.
But this whole thing.
Well, they should go off after two or three days. Well, if they don't, becomes a worse problem.
Pums, you know, the whole thing about owning a property, because this is really what most of us are raised from a young age to believe is the sign of success in South Africa, right? If you can own your own house, and you know, you can make your house yours, and you put a nail in the wall, and you don't have to worry because you're not renting. But I don't believe that much anymore. I think it's like it's a trap.
Wow.
It's a trap. As soon as you move
all
into
all the young people listening today.
Yeah, don't fall for this. Me. I mean, the millennials, most of them have got it right, is they rent and they don't buy. And also the idea of owning another property is a stupid one, because that's another set of maintenance. It's another set of concerns and responsibilities. Own as little as possible in terms of property. I don't think it's a winner. Like, unless you are a farmer who needs land and you need to grow crops on the land, and you need to be involved in that soil. I think that the idea of owning a house and having to maintain it the whole time, which is precisely what Pumi was talking about a second ago, that's huge work. It's a massive expense, and it never stops. Just when you think you've got everything together, and you're like, oh, good, I've fixed all the windows, because there were windows that were, I don't know, cracked, or there were frames that needed replacing, or the rain comes in here, or whatever. You sort that out. Just when you've got it sorted out, something else pops up.
It's interesting that you guys mentioned that frustration, which is different to the one that I'm feeling now. I've been renting for, I'd say, 5 years.
Mm.
And I have this frustration of not feeling like I have my own space. Just to do exactly what you were alluding to, Gareth, I want to be able to paint a wall,
sure,
and feel like, yeah, this is the color I want. Because it's not my place. I want to, well, I want to have, you know, this particular
fuchsia, like, pink.
No. But I do want to have a statement black wall. So I know that wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea.
No.
I've always had a vision of like this floating
shelf. But you can do
that.
If you have a long lease, you can paint, yeah, and do whatever, and then you just have to paint it back white when you leave.
Exactly.
For a year,
yeah,
it's not worth it for that sort of
investment. Well, you've been there for 5 years, yeah, man.
Well, see,
but then I always debated every year as well.
The other thing is, so before I had a house, I lived in an apartment, and I had bought it, but you have to have nice neighbors. You have to, you have to know the complex well. It has to be in a convenient place and all the rest of it. You really have to love the place. And a friend of mine was telling me at lunch yesterday, he's been living next to these nightmare neighbors. They would fight with each other. It was a man and a woman, and they would fight day and night, and they would scream at each other. Police would come. The police would be knocking on the door.
No.
They would be shouting at the police. They'd be saying, you can't come in. The police would say, we're going to break down the door. All of this happening while he was trying to go to sleep at night. And he said this was going on for like 2 years, and eventually they got evicted like last week or whatever. But he says he's had it.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, you get living in a complex which is pleasant, and then you get living in a complex which is horrible. And I mean, there are some places in Joburg that are just, the complexes are too big. There are too many people around. You don't know who you're going to end up next to. And it can really, it's like a roll of a dice. You know, if you throw a one, you're in big trouble for a long time. If you throw a six, you're the luckiest person in Joburg. It can happen. You never know.
Well, I've never envisioned myself living in a house in any case. So,
really? Yeah.
Oh, no, the killer. Sorry.
What do you mean the killer only targets houses?
The idea of living in a standalone house. Just
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Is exactly a nightmare on Elm Street. To drive into a yard with a long driveway at night, and then the trees that I thought were so storybook-like and picturesque when I bought it would now haunt me, because I'm thinking this is exactly where the killer could jump from.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm thinking, you know, I like to... I would essentially be perfect to live in a box. I like to be able to sit in one corner and still have my eye on the other corner. Really, like even with an apartment, I love the fact that I can sort of have my eye on everything all at once and feel comforted by that.
But see, why do you think? No, what do you think these people are who have these security cameras all over their house? And these days, you don't have to pay a fortune to have that done. You can almost buy a wireless system, which you connect at your door and. You can have it, you know, and in an apartment or a house, you've got certain places you need to know what's going on. But the rest of it, like, you're being paranoid, man. Pumi, this is paranoia, right?
This is not going to happen for me. Like, see, there are 50 other houses on the street. Yeah. Why would they come to your house? Why is the killer coming to
Who do you think you are that the killer wants you in particular? You
know, like, how annoying do you think you are that somebody's trying to kill you?
Wow. Even just not for anyone really coming out to kill me. It's just my paranoia. I would not be able to. I need somewhere closed. A complex is comforting to me. So that has always been my
vision.
What if the killer is part of the complex?
They've got therapy for that.
Yeah, they do.
What are the chances that the killer would want to strike in a complex?
Higher than,
there are
I
too
mean...
many moving parts. Than a standalone
house. How do you reckon that complexes get hit less than houses? How do you get that in? I mean, that's a preconceived idea that I challenge.
Because there's too much space in a standalone house. The yard is too big. Your screams will be muffled.
In
the storage that you have and the trees.
Unbelievable. Wow, unbelievable.
Your screams will be muffled, Osea.
We need to, while Dr. Hanan is on Mondays, we need to get you to sit down with him and explain. This is very important. Orksy Head says two words, fun bradar. That's what you get in a complex. I mean, that was inside the family who lived with the you know, there was the one kid, the fun bradar, Henry fun bradar. It was him. That family thought they were safe in a complex. Remember?
I just want you to know that most people are murdered by people they know. They could be in your apartment.
That's exactly right.
And hence why then I should not move in with anyone. Seeing as I leave this place, not talking to anyone.
No, Sia, you're full of it because this is not.
Do you have a roommate, Sia?
He has a housemate, yeah.
How do you luxuriate with the housemate?
Oh, no, we have a great dynamic. And she works a lot of like crazy weird hours. So, yeah, I get to walk around naked then.
Well,
very exciting.
Well, then.
That's what you wanted to know.
Hey, clearly it's not just you, Sia, because Michelle says, my thoughts exactly. I like to see the door from anywhere in my house.
Wow.
You have a very small house.
No, it's comforting to know where everything stands, where everything is.
Hanmin says, in a complex, the killer is locked in with you. That's exactly right. Exactly. And then, I love my home surrounded by a nature reserve with a view of the sea, says Andre. My garden has over 50 trees and no need for security. Well, I mean, that sounds amazing, Andre, but...
Sure.
That's you're pretty much in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's a part of me that is really attracted to the idea of living far away from other humans. But then I think about it and I go, no, in those horror movies, those are the people who get killed. The ones who are far, you know, like in the wilderness, in a log cabin. That's where the killer, the shadows creep up the walls.
Blair Witch. Blair Witch is.
And I think, no, that'll be much less safe. So I don't know, Andre, that's your call. Lucky asking a very rude question, is Pumi on coke? I wonder why he's saying that. Lucky, what's going on?
I don't even drink Coca-Cola no more.
Wonder
very
why he's
mad
saying...
at Aaron Mtswaledi.
Maybe
now, since they've reduced the sugar.
I know, it's ridiculous, right?
Oh gosh, did you hear about the Cristiano Ronaldo debacle?
He moved two cans of Coke that were on the table. So what's happened there? Because I saw the video, but I don't know what the whole furore is about.
So people who want to believe that Christiane is like this big and influential people believe the story.
Mm-hmm.
Then some finance people are like, please, if you think then he dropped the share price of Coke just by doing that, then you are silly. I really actually don't know what to believe. But long story short, he was at a press conference.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can get the specifics for you sports people if you really want to.
No, it's okay.
But whatever soccer thing is happening right now.
Yeah.
Oh, the Budapest. No, he wasn't Budapest. What is it? The Portugal versus Hungary Euro 2020.
Euro 2020.
Okay. All right.
He was there, a press conference for that. And interestingly enough, Coca-Cola is one of the main sponsors there. So he sat at a desk and Coke was plonked on the table and he moved the Coke aside and actually said, he referenced water, he said agua, and he pulled the water and then proceeded to take a chug of it. So now that was seen as a sign of, oh my goodness, Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't think Coca-Cola is healthy.
And did
he wants water.
No one thinks Coca-Cola is healthy.
Who in
no
the
one.
World? Well, yeah, who's still laboring under the misconception that Coca-Cola is healthy? I mean, who's that idiot?
Nobody.
Right?
Coca-Cola would like me.
No, they do not. And everybody
in their
statement,
they wanted to seem we are the world and we cater for more people, alas. So yeah, subsequently, or just could have been a coincidence when the markets opened following that.
And the share price was down?
Of Coca-Cola went down by 1.6%.
Hmm.
Which wiped out easily about $4 billion US dollars of Coke's price.
Well, according to Jermaine, Paul Pogba did the same thing with Heineken and removed it from the table in front of him. And I wonder if that also affected their price. Look,
I assume that's the Muslim soccer player, right? Because I think it was at the same place where he moved out of the way.
Okay. Well, I mean, listen, whatever it is, does anyone still really believe that someone like Cristiano Ronaldo drinks Coca-Cola when he's, when he's on his own at home? Absolutely not. Like, if you're a fit sports person, you stay away from Coca-Cola. It's like death. You don't drink that stuff.
Dude.
Right? Anyway.
Yeah. And my thoughts are, did he really make it happen or was it just a coincidence?
Ah, coinky dink.
Yeah. All right, well, we've got to get to headlines, so let's see what's happening in the world. Make sure that we can make sense of this craziness around us. Don't forget, later on, the Burning Platform is a part of what we've got on offer for you. We also have
Start with the Euro 2021 scores.
Yeah, because we're so on top of that on this show. And we've also got Sean Saunders joining us from Revix to talk us through the latest developments in the world of cryptocurrency. So all of that is happening in the next while. And by the way, I mentioned this on Tuesday. Have you had a chance yet to visit the Tom's Art Grand Opening Sale, which started just yesterday? I know, Sia, you were going to go because you want to buy some stuff to put on your walls and to put in your house. If not, there is still time. It ends on Sunday. That's Father's Day, and you'll find Tom's signature classical art, furniture, and accessories at 50% off. For me, maybe that's what you need to do to just make your house a little more exciting for you since you've got a bit bored with it and you want something new, so maybe you should go along there. Everything on their floor is 50% off. That's amazing. It doesn't apply to custom orders, but there is free delivery, also free installation and free consultation. So you need to go along and ask these people for what they've got and also find out if they can do something specifically for you. Of course, those custom orders are pretty awesome as well, and you can get them to deliver those for free, free installation and free consultation. But everything on the floor is at 50%. Don't miss this opportunity to pick up a classic bargain. Get to their Cromerville showroom. It's at 15 Dartfield Road in Cromerville. That's 15 Dartfield Road in Cromerville from today at 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. Same thing tomorrow, Saturdays and Sundays from 8 to 3 p.m. for some amazing, amazing bargains. That's Tom's Art in Cromerville. And make sure that you tell them Cliff Central sent you and they might just give you a cup of tea or something. Sounds good, right?
Hey, sounds if nice. You need some last-minute Father's Day shopping as well.
Absolutely.
If you really want to impress your dad and there make it go. Look like
that's
you
it.
Were thinking about him for weeks on end.
Yeah, you've planned this very carefully, yeah. I was.
This is it.
I stayed in yesterday. No, not yesterday evening. The evening before, the Tuesday night. There were a whole lot of people doing things, and I thought, no. It's too cold. I made a fire. I stayed at home. It was so nice. I actually sat on the floor in front of the fire in my house, and I was like, "Yo, what I need in this room is a mirror over there." And I thought I'd better go along to Tom's Art. So you can go today, 50% off, and tomorrow, all the way through until Sunday. Go and pick up a bargain and something that you'll love, something that you'll really, really love about a particular place in your house that needed something and you didn't know it until you put it up there. All right. Annette asks, is there any news on the decuplets, those 10 babies? We do have news for you. We'll get to that just now. We've got the latest update from the family. It's just such a mess. Right, Sia? I mean, there's no other way to say it.
From the dad's family.
Oh, my. I mean, really? That
was, that's the statement. The statement was from the father's family.
Correct. We haven't heard from the mother.
The mother and father.
Right.
Yes.
I'm too invested in the story and I hate it now.
I told you last week, Sia. I told you last week that this thing.
You did. That's what you said.
Now I want to see those babies. I need to see the babies. I need a heartbeat reading. I need something.
You are very. You've got
even a scan. Sia, even just a sonus.
Sia has got a sunken cost in terms of his commitment to this story, and now he's expecting a return. All right. Before we get to that, there's some stories in the news.
Just very quickly, I'll expand on this. There is a Robert De Niro movie from the early 2000s that I don't think got a lot of buzz around it, but it's called Simone, and it's spelled S, the number one, M-O-N-E.
Yeah. Yes.
And the premise of it, very quickly, is Robert De Niro is the suffering Hollywood director. And he's trying to make movies, doesn't really crack it. And he's trying to get the world excited about movies again. So he creates this ultimate gorgeous actress as a leading lady for this movie called Simone. It's Al Pacino. Thank you. I've been corrected by Monica. And so creates her all virtually using computers and graphics, and fools the world for a very long time that Simone is real, but she's a recluse. And then Simone starts selling albums, and then Simone endorses things. Simone makes so much money, and the whole world is fooled. A couple of days ago, I looked at this 10 bis 10 story and I thought, is this a Simone situation?
Yeah.
Are they trying to get us invested in news again? And
well, doesn't it also show you how stupid we are?
Donating money.
Yeah.
Were donating money.
Yeah.
This thing is a scam, y'all. It's a scam.
To the point where the father has to say, please halt on donations for now.
Yeah, stop.
How much money must he have received?
Well, it shows you how many nice people there are, but also how gullible they are. Because this is, and what stories interest people? Like, I don't give a fuck if someone has 10 children. I think I feel sorry for those people, but I don't care about that. It's not a news story to me. Clearly in this country, though, we have lots of people who are fascinated by the fact that one woman could pop out 10 kids, and that's what got the attention. So we'll talk about this now.
The family to do a very Michael Jackson-esque thing. It will boost tourism as well. Go to one of these suffering hotels right now, stand at the balcony, and whip all those kids out. I need to see all of those kids. Then I'll believe in the story.
All right.
What? And create a super spreader event?
Yeah, exactly.
There can only be 50 people at the hotel balcony.
So here's some news. Right. Former ESCOM board chair and businessman Jabu Mabuza has passed away from COVID-19 complications. Mabuza had a long career in business. He started as a taxi owner in the 1980s. In recent years, he served as ESCOM's acting CEO and chairperson, the group CEO of Tsohosan, and also chair of the Telkom board for a while. He was considered a really useful cadre to be deployed into these various places. But the news of his passing was announced on Wednesday evening. In his statement, his loved ones described him as a pillar of strength and a servant to his country who fought gallantly for political and economic freedom. He's survived by his wife, Siviwe, and three children. And that is Jabu Mabuza. And apparently, Pumi, it was because he had the first shot of the vaccine and had a bad reaction to it or something.
No, I don't know if it was because he had a reaction to it, but I do know that he had his first jab of the vaccine. So
I mean, it's sad when anyone goes, and I know he was very much involved in you know, a lot of the dodgy dealings that were going on at some of these parastatals. But as far as I can tell, he was one of the people who had cleaner hands than some of the others, and he was regarded quite highly among not only his political compatriots but also by some people in business. So I mean, it's very, very sad to see Jabu Mabuza's demise. And not exactly an old man either. You know, he wasn't a very old man. He was in his, 60s. Anyway, so that's the story there. 20 burnt bodies of suspected Zamazamas have been found in Orkney. Now, you know, Zamazamas are these people who do this low-level mining. They dig around in mines.
Illegal.
They dig around in mines that have been shut down, that have been condemned. And they try to find like a little scrap of gold or a little diamond or whatever, and they try to sell it illegally. And police near Clarkstorpe made an awful discovery after the bodies of 20 unidentified men suspected to be illegal miners were found over 2 days. They said the bodies, all with severe burn wounds and wrapped in plastic bags, were found on the 15th and 16th of June. So this was not an accident. Evidently, you know, if people are...
And someone had already wrapped, somebody was there trying to clean up the scene.
Correct. And they found all these bodies on the 15th and 16th of June. The first five were found at approximately 7 p.m. on Tuesday outside an old and unused mine shaft in Lawrence Park. 14 more were located on Wednesday near the railway line in Orkney. While still processing the scene, the police received information that another body was discovered where the initial five were found, bringing the total number to 20. And now, you know, we don't know who these people are. We have to identify them still. But life for a Zamazama, for these illegal miners, these people are just desperate. And I don't know if you heard that story last week that was in the news about Ladysmith. They said they'd found... they said they'd found diamonds just, you know, on the topsoil, basically. And there were people who drove there from Durban, people who just desperate, poor, unemployed people who they just... They just need to have a little bit of money to survive that month, and they're busy scrambling around trying to grab alluvial diamonds off the soil in Ladysmith. And it's highly unlikely that any of them were diamonds in the first place. But you've got to feel at least a little bit of compassion. You certainly have to. It should make all of us feel a little bit, you know, helpless, sad, depressed, uneasy about the fact that there are so many people in this country who are just trying so desperately to find anything that they can sell, that they can make a cent off of, because they don't have anything else. Look, there's no hope. And you've got to, unless you're a complete monster, find some compassion in your heart for these people, regardless of the fact that they're obviously completely misguided. It shows you the level of their desperation. And this is true for these Zamazamas too. Now, if they're 20 people whose bodies have just been found and nobody reported them missing, nobody seems to be able to identify them. Look, it's only a day or two, so there may still be some information. But this life is cheap, hey? Life is cheap. In some places, life has no value. And you've got to feel desperately, desperately sorry for the families and the communities that live in these kinds of squalor, and this kind of sadness and misery and deprivation, because for 20 bodies to just pitch up and nobody ever reported they were missing. They've clearly been there a long time too. Anyway, speaking of illegal mining, there was also a gas explosion, and this happened in the northwest. Apparently a gas explosion has caused some kind of tragedy in a disused mine shaft. And the National Association of Artisanal Miners received a video by an illegal miner from their members in the area. About 200 more artisanal miners that are underground have been injured, and there are more fatalities, but we are not sure of the numbers because the fatalities are in different levels of the mine. This is such difficult work. And again, they're illegal miners, but you know, they've got to try and find money somewhere. Police have made a number of arrests following a day of often violent protests in Harrismith. The residents of Intambazwe have been hurling rocks and petrol bombs at the N3 highway. They're demanding that the president come and address their service delivery grievances. On Wednesday, a truck was petrol bombed on the N3. Police are monitoring the situation. Now, again, I know that these are also desperate people, right? But it's amazing to me that they take out this anger and this ire and this vengeance and this violence on like anonymous truck drivers who are just trying to deliver stuff that probably don't live anywhere near Harrismith. I suppose it's just because Harrismith is one of those towns that a highway goes through, and that's the only thing that makes Harrismith interesting. If you've got a bad service delivery in a place like Harrismith, then you should go to your mayor's house, and you should be protesting outside the mayor's house, outside the municipal manager's house. It's not some truck driver's fault that you're upset and unhappy, that your city or town has been run into the ground. And I would go to the local ANC branch, because I guarantee you, Harrismith is one of those places that has been mismanaged for years. You don't take it out on the truck driver. And I mean, there's a limit to all that explanation that, you know, people make excuses for this kind of violence and behavior. They'll say, oh, well, you know, these people are sad and they're desperate and they don't have anywhere to turn. But you don't take it out on a truck driver. Imagine if your uncle or your brother or your cousin was a truck driver and he's employed to drive stuff from Durban to Joburg. And he's not involved in politics and he's not involved in anything. He gets petrol bombed. I mean, that he could die from the fire that breaks out there. He could be hit in the head. You know, something terrible could happen. It's not right that these communities take this out on complete strangers. And I understand they're frustrated, but you can't tantrum. You must go to the people who've caused the trouble. Anyway.
Shucks.
That's Harrismith. And then finally, doctors killed Maradona via negligence, says the nurse's lawyer. That's the latest
story.
I mean, this Maradona thing. So, I mean, clearly the people of Argentina thought that Maradona would live forever. And even though he was hardly healthy,
no matter what he was doing to his body.
Correct. Correct. Thank you very much. They're trying desperately to prove that Maradona was some kind of Superman and that he would have lived. And his doctors are to blame. Let me just give some advice to anyone who is, you know, like Dr. Conrad Murray, who treated Michael Jackson, or these doctors who treated Maradona. You can never do a good enough job for the fans, for the fanatics. The fanatics will think it's your fault no matter what happens. So don't do this. Don't go and work for somebody who's extremely rich and famous and popular, because you're going to get the blame if it doesn't go exactly right. He died of a heart attack at the age of 60. And that was after undergoing brain surgery for a blood clot, Maradona. This doctor, the one doctor, Gisela Madrid, is being questioned by prosecutors. And they are one of seven people under investigation for manslaughter after a board of experts looking into Maradona's death found he had received inadequate care and was abandoned to his fate for a prolonged agonizing period. They insisted it was the doctors treating Maradona while he recovered from the brain operation, not the nurse in question who were to blame for his death. I mean, what difference does it make? He's dead. And he would have died anyway because of the huge amounts of coke he was doing every single day. I mean, let's just, how about that? That hasn't come up once, you know? Look over here, everybody. Look over here. Don't look over here where the coke is. Like, he had huge fat lines of coke around him. Everywhere he went, on planes, on trains, on boats, wherever Maradona was, there's a big bag of cocaine somewhere. But that never comes up in these investigations. It's like, no, 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 no. He didn't do coke. Are you mad?
Maradona.
So that's what we've got in the news headlines. I do want to go back to that story of the 10 kids, the decuplets, as they're called, because the family released a statement. And I can't make head or tail of this thing. I mean, we can blame our news networks to a certain degree, but clearly there's been, this was a coordinated effort to misinform people, right? And in the world of fake news, this has got to be one of the top fake news stories. They can't find the kids. They can't find the mother. The father's family have released a statement to say, hey, we knew that we only knew what we knew because the husband had been tipped off by a relative. But like he's nowhere near. He hasn't seen the kids, apparently. This is the father of the children. That's what we know so far. Nothing.
There are so many angles and facets to the story. Starting, Sia, I know you're very invested, so you have every single minute detail, right? So first comes out, and this a week ago, after we'd spoken about it, right? Then comes the story that actually this woman and this guy were actually having an affair. This guy's married.
Yeah.
To someone else. And at the time last week, we hadn't figured out if they have other children or, but there are so many multiple births in this story, right? Because there are triplets somewhere along the way, another set of twins.
Mm-hmm. The elder twins who are six.
And then the statement that was released was the family of the father, so Tsotetsi. They called all the, and they are the ones that had opened a missing persons case,
right,
for this woman, because they were like,
yeah,
they don't know where she is, they can't get hold of her, they can't. But this guy, who the father has never seen the kids, has never been to a single like prenatal appointment, has never, so like the like dereliction of duty just as a father, even if it's one child or like 20 children, like this guy has completely, he's been nowhere for the full duration of this woman's pregnancy journey, but he was there to pose for a picture with the big check with Iqbal. I was just like, this thing.
Well, they did release the statement now that they can't prove anything, that they'd like people to hold off on donations because they're not going to they're not going to take any more money because they don't know for sure that these kids are around, and until they can actually present the kids to everybody, then they'll take more donations.
So I have a theory about that.
What's your theory?
They're saying people should stop making donations into bank accounts that say they are for the kids.
Ooh.
So I think what they're actually doing, there are people out there scamming, sending out bankers. This is the bank account. If you want to donate to the family, put the money here.
Right. And then people just accept that that is what it is, but it's actually a big scam.
Scam. It has nothing. None of that money is going to the family. Like, in their statement, nobody said anything about the supposed R1 million that was donated by Iqbal.
Well, I don't think that's for real. That's for sure. I mean, that's probably the biggest fake news of the whole thing, that Iqbal Serv would donate anybody any money. I mean, there's no way that guy's a philanthropist. But we're going to have to park it for a little bit longer. And if you've got any theories on this, I see Monica says, I think it's a big lie that went too far and just spiraled out of control. And now they can't put it back in the bottle. Maybe that's it. But we've got to get to Sean Saunders because he's going to update us on what's been going on in the world of cryptocurrencies. He's, of course, the co-founder of Revix, and he's here to tell us all about it. Good morning, Sean. How are you doing, man? Nice to see you again. Sean, you're there. We can't hear you. Don't know what's going on. Can you guys hear him?
Nope.
No. Not sure why, Sean. We can't hear you. Check your... There we go. Now we got you. Loud and clear. Yes.
Sorry about that. Anyway, good morning. Morning. Doing well?
Extremely well. So, what's been happening this week?
Busy week, Gareth. As usual, you've had the ultimate crypto influencer, Musk, doing his thing. So, I mean, we can go back a little bit, right? So you had on the 5th of May, mm-hmm. you had Musk coming out saying that Tesla was no longer going to be accepting Bitcoin as a means of payment because of the high environmental impact that mining and all the rest has. And that caused Bitcoin to drop about 12% that day. And that was $150 billion being pulled out of the market. So with a B. It's a lot of money that came out of the market from, you know, crypto's biggest fanboy back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, Musk tweeted that his car company would be potentially accepting Bitcoin again in the future as a means of payment should at least 50% of the Bitcoin that's being mined come from renewable sources. And this caused Bitcoin to skyrocket 10%. So a lot of that money came back into the market. So, I mean, to say that this is a bit ridiculous is an understatement. I mean, I've been in the crypto space for quite some time, and I'm like, my word, the fact that somebody can sort of manipulate the market in this way is, yeah, it just shows the infancy of the space, really.
Yeah, but doesn't it impact also on how the people who are involved in cryptocurrency seem to idolize someone like Elon Musk? I mean, you have been very clear about this from the beginning. You've got to be in this for the long haul. There is massive value to be made, but this is not a quick trade, a quick buy and sell. Unless you're one of those people who is a speculator, you've either got to believe in the underlying technology, and there's plenty of evidence to show that Ethereum is going to be the backbone of so many new innovations and so many really useful applications of blockchain technology. But the fact is, like, a lot of people are just hero worshipping Elon Musk. If he says do this, they all go for it. If he says do that, then they all suddenly pull away. This is childish stuff, huh? You talk about the infancy. I think there are so many people who suddenly have access to the internet, and you could see it on social media, that really they shouldn't even have access to a phone, let alone the internet.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's fascinating, though. I mean, like I said before as well, when this market pulled back, I mean, a lot of our customers went and sold. And that is the wrong time to be selling, right? I mean, again, look at this over the long term. Look at that longer term opportunity. Yeah. That's what we've been advocating at Revix for ages. Again, you know, it's a lot easier said than done. When your investment's down 10, 15%, that doesn't feel good. No. And when it's up 10 or 15%, you want to take profits. But, you know, something that I learned from being in the investment space for quite some time is, you know, when something increases in value and you sort of have that momentum behind that investment, like, that's the time you're meant to hold on. Like, the real, they call them 10 baggers, the real, you know, good investments that you have in your career are those that you hold over, you know, multiple years that increase in value, not one or two times, but 10, 15, 20 times. And that's still the opportunity in the crypto space. I personally see the fact that Musk is able to manipulate the market in the way that he can as a huge opportunity, because you're looking at an asset class at the moment, which is very emotional. And that if you're looking at, let's say, gold, I mean, no one can influence the market of gold in quite the same way as Musk can. So, you know, over 2, 3, 4 years, when you've got central banks and other big corporates buying into Bitcoin, you know, that's going to change the space materially. And all of a sudden, Musk's tweets won't have such a big impact.
So what's on your own personal agenda when it comes to investing at the moment? Because a lot of people say, all right, fine. It's now trading at, what, $38,822 for a Bitcoin, and Ethereum's at $2,426 right now. Are either of those really a bargain at this stage, or would you more want to go into Ethereum? Would you perhaps want to buy some of the smaller ones, some Cardano? You've spoken about them before, maybe some Monero. I mean, what's worth speculating on? And I know that this isn't the purpose of this feature. We don't get you here to give us actual investment advice. We're talking much more generally about cryptocurrencies. But if someone said to you, well, you know what, I've got like R1,000, what do you think it would be best served going into? Would it be best to put it into just plain old Bitcoin? Can I bet on that? Is it better to rather diversify that portfolio and buy an index on Revix? What would you suggest is the best way to go?
I mean, I'm totally biased here, right? But no, let's look at the data, right? So if you're looking at the data, and this is the reason that we created our bundles at Revix, right?
Yeah.
If you look at the returns over the last 12 months, you had our top 10 bundle outperform Bitcoin by 3 times. If you go back 3 years, you've seen roughly about a 2 to 4x outperformance of the top 10 bundle. Mm-hmm. You go back 5, 6, 7 years, I mean, you're looking at a substantial outperformance of that top 10 bundle. I mean, you're talking like 3, 4, 5x. And the reason for that is, remember, Bitcoin right now is a $1 trillion asset. Like, it is really big. So for that to increase 10%, you're looking at significant amounts of money having to enter the market and be removed from the market. If you're looking at some of the smaller cryptocurrencies, and by small, I'm not talking like some of these weird and wonderful altcoins. I'm talking about still cryptocurrencies within the top 10. the, you know, the emergence of Ethereum over the last 12 months, I mean, that, you know, has returned about 800% over the last 12 months. It's those sort of opportunities, and that's the second biggest cryptocurrency. So think about the likes of Cardano. Think about the likes of, you mentioned, Monero. So some of these other cryptocurrencies that are still sort of in their own infancy, they were only created 3, 4, 5, 6 years after, in some cases, even like 7 or 8 years after Bitcoin. And that's the opportunity now, because remember, at the end of the day, what is a cryptocurrency? It's essentially a network. And people are able to buy into that network. And in some cases, there's a limited supply. And in some cases, there's not a limited supply. And at the end of the day, it's a technology. It is a technology that you're investing in. And if you're buying Bitcoin, I mean, you're buying a very robust, because it is the oldest cryptocurrency in existence, a very robust and tested technology. If you're buying into the likes of Ethereum or more, you know, that's sort of like a V2 cryptocurrency, or you're looking at some of the newer and more novel cryptocurrencies, the likes of Cardano, the likes of Tron, the likes of EOS, you're looking at essentially more modern technology, just without those network effects and without the sort of tried and tested network. So there's these trade-offs the entire time. But, you know, again, we can't pick which of these cryptocurrencies, and that's the ultimate wisdom in the space. You can't pick which cryptocurrency is going to be the success story of next year, or which cryptocurrency the likes of Amazon is going to potentially build some decentralized application on, or Microsoft's going to use in the future. So for our, you know, our, for all intents and purposes, our sort of our process really is to say, listen, take a diversified approach. Own the majority of the cryptocurrencies and
you,
in the market.
And you're still not a huge fan of Dogecoin?
No, I'm not, unfortunately. No. Okay. It doesn't do anything, right?
Right. I
mean, it's hard to sell a cryptocurrency that's, you know, solely there for gambling purposes.
Purely
don't get me wrong, there's a big part of this whole crypto market that's there for gambling purposes, but Dogecoin's just, yeah. No.
I heard the most brilliant thing the other day. I heard people, and this kind of marries into what you've just said, and I wonder if Pumi and Sia have some input on this, but that we are such an emotional species as humans. If we could ratchet down our emotionality by, I don't know, just 1 or 2%, we would get so much more done, because so many of the reasons that we do things are based on how they make us feel or what we think we'll feel if we do them. And If we didn't do that, if we just used logic and we just used reason a little bit more, I'm not saying we need to become automatons who only apply logic and reason, but if we just could take our emotionality down a little bit, we would be so much more successful as a species. The things that hold us back are usually those emotive decisions. And trust me, you're just as emotive if you're betting on something because you like Elon Musk as if you do something because it makes you feel good. Those things are just, to me, like our biggest stumbling block. Do you agree?
I do agree. I mean, Sia, I don't know. What are you thinking, Bumi?
Yeah, no, it ties into the whole Coca-Cola Cristiano Ronaldo thing, really.
Exactly.
If you're not buying Coca-Cola just because Cristiano Ronaldo said so.
We worship these human beings. They make us feel like we're special, or we're connected to some kind of superhuman quality. And there's no such thing. I mean, Elon Musk isn't. He may be more adventurous. He may be slightly autistic. He may have some really good ideas, and he may have pulled off a success or two, and we'll give him credit for that. Doesn't mean he's superhuman. We keep looking for gods among men, and there are no such things.
But that's the other interesting opportunity here as well, right? Is that, remember, you've got a really emotional market with cryptocurrency or any other market. Actually, look at all these games, meme stocks. But that's the opportunity as well. If you're able to be more objective and kind of look through the noise, and, you know, kind of, you know, Warren Buffett had the quote saying, you know, be greedy when others are fearful. Like, that's the opportunity, really, right? I mean, again, easy to say this, so much more difficult to kind of enact when the opportunity arises.
All right. Well, we've got to wrap it up there, I'm afraid. Thank you, Sean. Always good to see you. We will catch up again in a week's time. That's Sean Sanders, who is the co-founder of Revex. You can find out how to go and invest and get a diversified portfolio of crypto assets. Just go and speak to them at Revex, revvix.com, revix.com. Thanks, Sean. Good to see you.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much.
Cheers,
bye,
man. All right. Coming up, the Burning Platform. It is our chance to catch up on all the big stories of the week, talk a little bit about all the news, but this morning also about energy, because energy is an obviously big subject in South Africa. We've had a couple of weeks of very unstable power supply. We're going to talk a little bit about how Africa deals with energy and how we could better deal with energy. We're going to speak to someone called NJ Ayuk, who is an author. He's also the executive chairman of African Energy Chamber. And we'll find out what he has to say about all of this and more. Phumi Mashego joins me, and we will have you as our special guest after 7 o'clock for The Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's.
Yes, can I tell Sia one thing before he goes away?
Yeah.
Literally, yes. I just read this, Sia, and I'm sure it's going to excite you very much. Like, the world's third largest diamond ever
was found.
Just in time for your just in time for your engagement ring, Sia.
I need to go and find these
look
people.
At it, look at the joy on his face. Look at it. Look at it.
I am bringing the Bible, the Quran, the Torah. I'm whipping out the verses about sharing. I need to say, my good people, help your fellow man.
Okay, well,
give me something.
We got to know more about this, and we will find out in the next hour. Pumi's going to give us some details on where they found it and who owns it and all the rest of it. We'll get to that just now. Cliffcentral.com, Thursday morning. Cliffcentral.com.